Hey, good morning, Chris. How are you?
Well, Roland, very well, thanks.
How was your first week of school?
Always different than the last. That's about the best start I can give to you. Always different than the last. And no matter what the expectation you have of kind of going in, it's there's let's say 99% of the time it's the same, but that other 1% is a pretty deep percent of here comes a curveball, let's see what you do with it.
I feel like the curveballs, they never stop, and you just have to, just like in baseball, you have to be prepared, and you have to see the pitch coming out of the pitcher's hand. And when you get good at that, you can see the spin on the ball, and then you know what to do with the pitch. And I hope, as teachers, that our batting average is better than 300, because imagine that in a classroom if 30% of the time you were able to deal with what was coming your way, I think we might be in big trouble.
You definitely want to be hitting more than 300. And there's so many expectations around there that we definitely are firing off closer to 1.0. There's I'm gonna go specific because I think I don't know. It's sometimes better to give that to be a little bit more specific, and it's easier, I think, to kind of talk about it. So going from baseball to context, every year we come back into the classroom, and we know that we're going to have students. We know that we're going to have students that possibly are coming in off of suspension and expulsion. So we always wonder about, what students will we see right in the front end of September? And we talk about the whole, is it a good measure of the board if there's no students that are coming into our program? So if anyone just jumped in, my program, I work with students that have been expelled or suspended from regular programming. So is it a good measure if we have no students in the beginning? And counter to that, is it does the data mean something else if we do have students when we start? Regardless, one of the biggest challenges that we face on that front end, and it's that deep 1%. We know it's coming. It's we read the sign. Oh, can I pause for a sec? Yeah. Did you hear that story this past week about reading batting signs and how, what was it, Boston was using
Yes,
the
I
eye
did.
watch,
I
the
read
Apple
about that.
Watch? Dude, there we go, connecting school and life. And you throwing down the batting average. Wasn't that
That
remarkable?
they're using the technology to cheat. Oh, I
Yeah.
think I'd okay. So we can't say for sure what's happened, what's not happened, but I think with
No, exactly.
the all this new technology that is like basically invaded our society and quite pervasive. I'm not surprised at all that somebody's figured out how to use this technology to get what they need.
Yeah, and it what kind of blew my mind. I saw a snippet of the I guess it was the news conference, and it must have been the president of the Boston team that was using it. I think it was the Boston team that was using it, and they were tracking New York's signals. They said, you know what, he kind of was a little bit more nonplussed about it. He goes, we've been sign stealing has been happening forever. Forever. He goes, it's just, unfortunately, I guess we took it too far this time. And it really made me think about just the culture of theft was existed, and they didn't have a problem with that. They just didn't like it when augmentation, when it became cyborg based, as opposed to just humans staring at the sign and trying to figure it out. I was mind
So
blown.
you're mind
I was just
blown
mind
with the
blown by that.
fact that they're like, oh, we've been stealing signs forever. Stealing signs isn't the issue here. The issue is using the technology to steal the signs. Is that what baffles you?
Like somehow that, yeah, that somehow that's the problem. That the augmentation was the thing that burst the dam. That was the issue that broke open this somehow dirty little secret that everybody knew about.
Isn't it
It was just
interesting
fascinating to me.
that the whole stealing of the signs is part of the culture? It's like it's going to happen. That's why the catchers have, and the first base coach, the third base coach, they all have these signs, and they're constantly changing their signs. It's amazing. It's when you, for me, when I look at the subculture of baseball, it always fascinates me more than the actual game, because there's so much going on all the time.
Mm. Well, dude, ain't that the thick of it, though, right? Whatever is the sort of the front presentation, if you can get behind the curtain a little bit and see some of the mechanics or the guts. I got one more divergence, and then I'll get back on point. It also reminds me of this dude. I apologize, but you know my overindulgence in podcasts. I just get these random thoughts that aren't mine. I'll say that right up front. They aren't mine. It's just stuff that I've picked up in places. But there was a podcast about a guy wearing one. It was, I don't know if it was pre-Google Glass or it was in step with Google Glass, but the guy was wearing it everywhere. And he used it constantly to sort of remind himself and data track. And there was a, it raised the conversation around wearing Google Glass as a permanent fixture in your life, almost as a prescriptive tool. So, you know, part of the argument would be that if you need glasses to, as I do, to correct your vision so that you can take in the information better, what if, which ostensibly it's partially an issue with my eyes, but it's also it also has to do with the hardware of my eyes connecting with my brain. So no one ever argues that I wear glasses like somehow that's an unfair advantage. And I know I'm stepping into a whole other zone of equity here, but if I just take it back to this guy that always wanted to wear his Google Glass, and he would use, and it was a Google Glass, it was his hacker version, but he wore it all the time, and he would use it constantly to remind himself, inform himself, do on-the-spot research, and, you know, is that cheating?
I think that's interesting, like your point about wearing glasses and how for you, some people might see it as advantageous for you. I've never really thought of it that way, but I know that the whole Google Glass thing and just people being worried that they were being recorded all the time and things would be captured without their knowledge scared them so much. But again, I think people... If I go somewhere and I want to capture what's happening, I think I can make that happen no matter what people say or what people think. Would you agree?
Yep. Fair enough. So that idea of cheating, you've done some pretty phenomenal work in the classroom there with, I think, raising our understanding of tech in class as tool, you know, tool towards learning, and really making the clear argument that, well, not only making the clear argument that it's purposeful, but also demonstrating the outcomes quite clearly. This is what happens when we kind of go there. And what's cool about it is I think you've kind of isolated some of the counter arguments that are fear-based and allowed others to sort of see this is something that is reasonable to move forward with. Does that ever pop up? Has that ever popped up for you, that conversation, like somehow everyone using tech, I want to say the word cheating, but cheating is the wrong word, but somehow that is an unfair advantage. I'm always faced with the kids that don't have, that's unfair.
It creeps in. Or the
ones that do.
Why does that person get to use that tech to do this task? And when I try to explain to them as best as I can that person requires it in order to be able to produce a type of work that is equal to what they're producing, they have a very hard time seeing that. They just they feel like they deserve to use it as well, and that they argue that their product would be much better if they had the use of the technology. So one person's using it to create something that will even the playing field with the rest of the class. And then the other person who can already create without the tech is saying, but I want it too, because I can do so much better with it. And then it's a conversation of it's a conversation about equity and needs, and then you go from there and you try to get them to understand as best as they can what you're doing and why you're doing it. And the reality is that we can't have one-to-one devices for everything all the time. Mm-hmm. And when we do have that, everybody's really pumped and really excited. But
I know
it's not a reality in education unless, well, general education, I would say. Generally speaking, people don't have one-to-one programs. It's still a bit of a novelty, a rare occurrence, in my opinion.
Yeah, I'd agree. The back to your sort of the first lead in this is how the week went. So the challenge, that sort of that deep 1%, man, that deep 1% that I find myself constantly coming back to is just managing the paperwork that has to happen around the students and their intake process into my program. And, you know, the 99% of it is familiar, but that 1%, the standout, really is how the sources sometimes change, or coordinating the intake meetings, or getting connections to all the individuals. Because we're a bit of a, let's say, our program is a bottleneck. So we receive information from a few different sources. And to bring those all together to build programming for a kid is just the waistline. And then it kind of bellows out from there again, where then we're connecting directly with instructors to get curriculum often to help students out. So that's always a thing that kind of mind blows me when we come back. That was the same for me before I worked in this program as well. But that was kind of my context this week, which was chasing signatures and sign-offs and acknowledgements. How about you?
Well, it's interesting you say that, because I wasn't even thinking about paperwork. But the paperwork that I've been dealing with this week has been unbelievable, because the school sends home an envelope full of papers for parents to review and to sign and then send back. And then I send a few things as well that I would like the parents to provide me with. And it's funny. It's okay. This is perfect, because I didn't know we were going to talk about this, but when all your papers are finished and there's like 7 different sheets, you have to put them in alpha order and then send them down to the office. So you've got 7 piles all in alpha order. But I mean, it's rare for all your students to bring in all the papers in the first couple of days. It takes the first week, and it goes into the second week. So there was an email sent out from the office basically saying thank you to such and such teacher. All your paperwork was in. And I called the office and I said, I didn't know this was a contest. And they said, oh, it's not a contest, but we thought we'd just put it out there to remind everybody. And I said, my paperwork is done. It's all sitting here on my table. I'm just waiting for one more student. And I took a picture of this, of my my guided reading table, covered in stacks of paper that are all in alpha order. Yeah. Sent it to the secretary, said, look, I'm not kidding. I'm ready to go. I'm just waiting on one more. And she really enjoyed that. But to me, I've been spending a week looking at these papers, collecting papers, saying to students, could you remind your parents, or could you just like check them at home and see if mom and dad had a chance to do anything with these things, because I know it's a lot, and some kids have brothers and sisters, so that means that like you're doubling or tripling the amount of paper. So I didn't even think of that, because that's so normal, in my opinion, for an elementary teacher, that it's not even on the radar. But now that you brought it up, it's like it's always on my mind, that paperwork. But so aside from the paperwork, the thing that hit me the most this past week was that There's more going on than just the instruction and the supervision. Like, I found myself, and this won't sound strange to elementary teachers, and if anybody's listening, they're probably wondering why I'm even bringing it up, but I was just so aware of the first week. Like, I was paying attention because I knew you and I would be talking about it, so I was really paying attention to, like, what can I take away from this week that really struck me? And it's the fact that teachers aren't just teachers, meaning we're not just providing content for students to take in and then checking out what they pop out. We're not doing that. Like, I had a lot of kids in my class this week crying, overwhelmed, not mentally prepared for the tasks at hand. They just seem distracted. And so I'm the stress of the job as an instructor is always there, but you can't ignore their need for, like, building the relationship, their need for that one-to-one chat about what's upsetting you right now, what is it that I can do to help you move forward. There was a lot of that, and I think that involves getting to know your kids, letting them get to know you, a comfort level that comes with time, and that's good. Like, I'm not denying any of that. I'm just saying that if my job was to just go in and just introduce them to different parts of the curriculum and then look for output, then I would be setting myself up for a very difficult school year. And so I think in the first month or month and a half, for me, there's a lot of that making sure that the kids are okay in terms of like their mental health and their wellness, and then kind of proceed. But like I said, that stress of the stress of knowing that I need to teach them certain things and introduce certain topics, that's always there, and it just weighed on me a lot this week. And I know it's just the first week, but that's kind of what I took away from it.
You bring to mind for me some of the challenge of when summer barbecue season, you're standing around, you're chatting with your neighbors, and not everybody in my neighborhood's a teacher, and you start to talk education, and there's always the kind of, not always, sorry, often I'm faced in the conversation, maybe the more politicized version of education or the mass media version of education. And I realize quickly that my context as a teacher is both specific and generalized. And in order to sort of find some of the balance in that stress for me is the ability to balance those worlds. And I love the work that I do, and I feel it's purposeful, and I feel the, I would have said the constant connection just because of my thought fuel that I generally have for my job and my work. And you double up on that with the constant connection now where, I imagine you go there, you willingly go into the digital connections, and then it rarely gets turned off, right? Or you're rarely reminded, you rarely can avoid the reminders or the prompts about who you are, what you're doing, and who you're connecting with. So one of the things that this week really brought to mind for me is that balance of trying to bring best of what I do outside of school into school, and reflecting on what's the best of the stuff that's happening in school, even in this first week, that I know makes me a better person when I'm not at school. And I find a really clear litmus for that is how I interact with my own children at home. Because as you're talking about that stack of papers on your table at school, I have I'm aware of these types of tables. Almost every educator, I think, has some designated table in multiple different zones that becomes, it sometimes it's the dining room table, you know, the only time you ever see it is on special occasions, and then boom, all the paperwork comes back out again, whether it's marking or creation or doing work with your own children. But I think about that, those reams of things that my elementary colleagues were putting together, and the time spent doing that, and then the double up time of spent at home of going through all that. And I have a real appreciation for my elementary colleagues for taking the time to put that paperwork together. In those moments when I receive it at home, and I say this because both my children are, they're in the elementary panel right now. When I receive it at home, I really do have to make the transition from teacher colleague and understanding what my elementary teachers are doing and shift into parent mode and recognize that this is important information that I need to work through with my kids, and they need to understand the importance of it, and they have to have some sense of the content, whether it's a summarize or, you know, I'm just kind of putting it into terms that they can understand. But it's a big job to put it together, and it's a big job to work through those lessons at home. And I totally get it, that, you know, people that would be frustrated, either teachers putting it together or the parents, oh, here's another thing we have to read. Because it is a lot of work to help your kids make sense of it, which at the heart of it, I think that's a core tenet of my teacher side. And it's just magnified by my parent side, as they know we have to have a fundamental understanding of this. This is important to your future. And not just to dismiss it as kind of extra.
I like the idea of bringing bringing the best of what you do outside of school and then bringing it to school. Mm-hmm. I like that idea, and I think a lot of us do that, but maybe we wouldn't put it that way. But like yesterday, my son was at hockey, and I was watching him when he was on the ice, and the next group that was preparing to go on the ice, they were you know, coming in, going into the dressing room, and two of my new students were there, and they came right over to chat with me. It was really cool to see them in that environment. I think they appreciated seeing me outside of work and just like as a dad, right? So we were talking, and I was asking them about their hockey schedule, and they basically have like 3 hour-and-a-half ice times this weekend. And as they're telling me about the process that they're experiencing, I say to them, well, it's a good thing I didn't give you any homework, right? And they both laugh. And I think to myself, you know, if my kid came home with homework, how would we be able to manage the hockey, all the other things we do on the weekend, with that notion that there's some unfinished business to do for school.
Yeah.
And it was like, you know, I met two parents yesterday. I met the two parents of these boys, and, you know, I joked with them about it too. And they said, you know, like, we're really appreciative of the fact that you didn't send home a bunch of stuff this weekend, because we're here. Like, we're living at the rink all weekend, and the kids are stressed because they're trying out for high level hockey, and that's where their energy is. And that's where we're like letting them put their energy, because this is important to them, and this is what we're doing. And I already know that, though, because that's kind of my philosophy. I already know that, and I'm hoping that many of my students do extracurricular things with their family. I know not all of them do, but I just think of, I could assign all kinds of stuff all the time, but what would be the purpose of it? What's the purpose of it? And whatever that purpose is, have I relayed that to my parents? Have I communicated to my parents that when I do assign something, here are the reasons why it's important that it happen with you, and here's why it happened in the first place? So it really got me thinking yesterday, in particular, seeing these two really cool kids at the rink, and just looking at the excitement in their eyes, and the mental preparation that they were going through in order to go and do what they love to do on the ice. Like, it's a small thing, but when you decode it, I guess, when you break it down, you see the different parts And then you can appreciate and assign some value to those parts. Because on Monday morning, when I say to somebody, how was your weekend? What did you do? When they say to me, oh, I had three tryouts for hockey. And then I'm like, okay, grab your agenda, grab your lunch bag, head over into the room. Like that, you're missing that context that I had yesterday. You don't see the same excitement. Mm. You don't see the parents there with the kids supporting them. Like, you don't see any of it. You just hear, oh, I did this. And it's like, okay. And then I look at the next student. What did you do? It's missing a lot of ingredients. And seeing that yesterday, mm-hmm. and experiencing that yesterday makes me just much more aware of the missing pieces that I don't see on Monday morning when I ask about the weekend. It's so cool. It's just so cool.
Yeah, I think when we were chatting midweek, there was sort of like this concept for our chat today emerging, the teacher being more than a teacher, and what that kind of meant in yours and in our hearts, like yours and my heart. Like, what is it that, you know, what's our lived experience in that frame? And if you know, in sort of choosing to look at that or kind of pull that apart a little bit, I think we inevitably land on students being more than a student. And then you end up somewhere in the middle is, how do we see each other as more than just the classroom? And making sure that when those moments pop up, whether they're in the community or, you know, in the hallways, allowing for the time for connectivity to occur. And that's it's a challenging place to be. I think of the parent-teacher nights when I first started teaching, and this is back in my, you know, my previous life when I was teaching hospitality. And, you know, part of the conversations coming out of that would be discussions with the parents about, you know, your child, like they really love vegetables, or they really love this certain food and working with that food. And I could feel the parents wanting me to address learning skills and expectations, but I'm kind of coming at it from a softer side of just observation of something that I know that just fills their soul. Like, the kid is just so happy making bread. And I'm kind of saying to the parents, like, let your whatever next family event you have, just let the kid into the kitchen, let them make bread for you, because the joy that the kid has in making that bread, which is entirely connected with the curriculum that I was teaching, but it doesn't say something curricular necessarily. It's not saying, you know, fulfilling the expectation of understanding sanitizing measures or the reactivity between yeasts and different leaveners on the structure of gluten. Like, that's not the stuff. What it is your kid loves to make bread. Have you thought about letting them do it? And what I've noticed, so this is about, let's say, 7 to 10 years ago, during these parent-teacher moments, when you mention homework, I can see the shift, you know, in sort of cruising over different educators' websites, both, and this is Canadian, Ontario, American, sort of like our whole, that's almost like, I would say that's almost like my local PLN. My non-local PLN is, let's say, some of the people that I follow in South America or, you know, in Europe somewhere. But my local PLN, there seems to be a shift to looking at homework through a wellness lens. Read some magazines with your family, go for a nature walk, which somewhere in the middle, everyone kind of knows that there's education and learning that exists in there, but no longer is it as prescriptive. And I would argue that these moments in the, you know, in the community, when you're connecting on a human level, many people know I'm a teacher. Most likely the individuals, kids that I see in the neighborhood, are going to know me from one of two contexts, either because they know where I live on my street and they've seen me walking the dog, or they've seen me in a school. And the conversation where we try to divide that, which seems to be something that students have kind of been forced to do for a long time, and teachers have been forced to do for a long time, that's really stressful. It's really stressful. It reminds me, one last thing, of a conversation I was asked to help out with an AQ, a colleague of mine, Jill Stambulich, And I was talking about lesson design, kind of modern learning and wellness, blending them together, and kind of touching a little bit on some of the conversations that are happening in education that some teacher candidates might not be a part of yet, because it is the stuff that's right, let's say, on the front line, the stuff that's happening in the schools. And I put to the group, I put that bringing the best of home to school and bringing the best of school to home, partially because I really fundamentally believe in that, and it should somehow connect with your values and intentions as an educator, as a human even. And an individual in the classroom said, but I need that wall. I need that wall between, because I don't necessarily feel safe bringing the best of my home to school or the best of my school home. Somehow it would be judged. And I just kind of existed in that space. I left it to the class. No one really wanted to jump on it, but I could tell this individual that said it really did believe that. This individual wanted that wall there, didn't want to bring the best of both. And I just knew for myself and my soul, I've been there. I kind of started that way when I was teaching, and I had to have a really, really clear line between. And I just find over time, I'm starting to be seen in the community. Like, what am I going to do? Dive behind a garbage can? You know, you know. And some people would say, yeah, like you go the opposite direction when you see one of your students. And I'm like, I can't go there. But I can remember that being a very stressful thing, somehow thinking like me as the teacher and me as the human are two different people.
Well, I can see that. Like, I understand that some people would feel that way. For me, it depends. It goes back to relationship. So if I'm somewhere and I happen to catch a glimpse of a student or a family that I've worked with or currently working with, and I know that it's a rocky relationship, then I just try to not avoid, but like I'm not going to go there if I can help it, because if I'm feeling some stress over it, then what might they be feeling, knowing like, okay, obviously this is a one-way thing because they're not here to talk about their perspective, but if it's a rocky relationship, then I think that they may feel the same way seeing me, and that's fair, right? Like, what are you gonna do? But like you said, I'm not gonna go hide in the stands at a hockey game where my kids are playing because I see somebody that I don't feel comfortable discussing things with or whatever. But you were talking about in the community and in the school, and it reminded me of something that many teachers do, which is, you know, ask students about their extracurriculars and then try to attend an extracurricular event and to see the student in that different light. And that's always been something that that's always been something that kind of has been in the back of my mind ever since I became an educator, is to try and see the students in a different light on their time. And so every year students are in sporting events and other extracurricular stuff, and I always say, tell me when this is happening and I will see if I can come and watch. Now sometimes students will say, I don't want you to come and watch, and I say, okay, but you know that I'm interested. And other students tell me, okay, let me get you my schedule and then let me know what you can do. And then I do attend. And it's kind of fun because I take my kids with me. So I say to my kids, okay, Saturday at 2 o'clock, we're not doing anything, so we're going to this place or that place to see one of my students do what they do on the weekend. And I think for me, like, obviously people would say, well, it's a really nice thing for you to do. But for me, it helps me. I've made some notes here that it helps me make that connection and to establish that context that I can't get on a Monday morning when I say, what did you do on Saturday? And they say, oh, I had ringette practice. And I'm like, oh, that's great. And then we all just move on with our lives. But if I can go to the ringette practice and I know, can see this student, their work ethic, their sportsmanlike conduct, a totally different context, totally different environment, then I think it just makes, for me, that relationship a lot stronger, because I can see all the different, like I said, all the different pieces come together. Mm-hmm. So it's really neat that I was able to make that connection when you were talking about the in-school and out-of-school thing. Now, I've got a question for you. Like, what, I don't know about your relationship with parents or students, but are there times where you might see a student that you just don't mm-hmm. jive with, or they don't jive with you, and so you see them outside of school, but that's the extent of it? Like, you won't approach and talk to them, or does that even matter to you? I'd love to hear your perspective.
No, I don't. There's probably been, you know, where it kind of comes down to more, not the, let's say, like positive or negative relationship, but where you're kind of, it probably plays out, you know, when there's people that, you know, we always know, but then you're surprised by them being in a space. So you're kind of busy doing a thing and you kind of turn around and all of a sudden there's somebody standing there, like, oh, okay. Hey, you, oh, hey, you. And there's that kind of moment of, it's almost similar kind of strange, ill communication moment, like when you're walking down the hallway and you make eye contact with someone and you both do the hallway shuffle, shifting left, shifting right. It's like, why can't we just get around each other? This is hilarious, right? So it's in a similar bag of emotional confusion where you turn around and maybe you see a parent there or you see a student there out of context. And that moment of not recognizing the individual, I think, is probably the most, is the only kind of uncomfortable moment that I have. And then I kind of just shift into, hey, how's it going? And then just sort of riding it out politely. For me, I measure it as whether or not have I built that classroom relationship? And then from there, it's sort of, do I build a relationship kind of to the hallways? And then is the relationship built to the parking lot where I would actually, you know, openly expect to be, say, see you later, so-and-so, or they would say, see you later, Clough, in the hallway. And then you kind of build out to the random spaces, like, you know, at the mall or at the movie theater. I don't carry, if my relationship with a student is only in the classroom, then I do, to a degree, think about, I personally bear the responsibility of building a new layer if I run into that student in the hallway. And then I bear the responsibility of building a new layer if I see them in the parking lot. And I think that my brain doesn't automatically go to the positive or negative relationship. I just go to, am I actively trying to pursue or build that next layer of the relationship? So that, you know, like where we started this conversation, so that when we can be more human around each other, it's not just one note that is the classroom. I'd like to get to that generalized connectivity. And everyone, you have different depth, what that means. But just that ease of connectivity in all spaces, I think, benefits a community. You know, you're at the grocery store and you can equally speak to the student and the parent, or you're out on date night with your spouse and you see a student just with their students. You're okay to sort of say, this is my spouse, or this is a person that I've only kind of talked about in classroom. This is the real life. And you can do that. And then you move on. I mean, if something sparks up in the moment, that's interesting to talk about. One of the things I won't do that I know is that when I'm out of the classroom, the predominant frame for conversation, the seed point, is classroom stuff. Now, I try to make classroom stuff as robust as possible. I'm not the teacher that will sort of encounter, you know, young man at hockey practice and say, hey, by the way, you make sure you get that math homework done. I won't do that part. Although I did one time just for fun, you know, and it comes down to a little bit of that, a little bit of the, let's say, teacher comedy. I was out at the movies one time with a buddy and we were walking past a group of students. Now, to my buddy, it was just a group of teenagers, but I recognized the whole group as young men from the high school that I was working at. And at the time, our school had a no hats policy. And as I cruised past, they didn't see me. I kind of came by on the blind side. And as I just came behind them, you know, I throw on the best teacher voice and say, excuse me, gentlemen, can you please take your hats off? And I just kept on walking. And it was funny. I threw back over my shoulder and three of the four took their hats off. And it was just, and we sort of turned and made eye contact and they're like, oh, Clough. And I'm like, sorry, guys, I was just messing with you. Enjoy your movie. So, you know, that's about as deep as I've ever gone, sort of trying to intentionally draw school norms out into the community. I believe it's a new layer. And if you're working to do it, you're going to find some cool stuff there.
I think that's part of the fun. Like what you did there, if a high school teacher had done that to me at the movies, you know, I would have laughed and thought, hey, this guy's cool. Like, you know, he's messing around with us. See, to me, that bringing the school context into the personal context, to me, that's funny. Mm-hmm. And that's kind of my style, right? Like, I would probably joke with people like that. But imagine if you don't have a good relationship or a good rapport with that teacher and they do that to you outside of school, then, you know, you might be upset or whatever.
Yeah, for sure. But part of it was I would say I did have that ease. Like those gentlemen were, we had the hallway relationship. We had the parking lot relationship. So the next natural step is when you encounter each other so far outside of the school context, can you, like you said, have a little bit of comedy? So of the four guys, three of them went, two of the four lifted their hat, like actually started to pull their hat off their head. The third of the four just put hand to brim, and the fourth just kind of like stared at the moment. So I don't know, there's no true data point there, but that was probably representative of my experiences in the hallways too. You know, 50% will kind of comply and kind of do it. 25% will kind of put their hand to it like they're going to do it. 25% will just like, who the heck are you? Right, but we did, but there was laughs that came off it.
When you were talking about the layers of the relationship, I really like that, because it's so true. There you can see it that way. There are some shallow relationships, and those are the relationships that, you know, happen at school, because there's a teacher-student relationship and that's where it starts and ends. Mm-hmm. And then there's the, like you said, the parking lot layer, and then there's the totally out of school layer. I'd like to add another layer, the layer where you end up chumming with the parents while the student is standing there praying that this will come to an end. I know there are a couple of parents that when I see out in the community, I love to chat with them. And then you look over at the child and they're dying. They're like, can this please come to an end? Because the relationship is so, that layer with the parent is so genuine and so like open that the child is just shaking their head like, can we please move on with our lives here? I find those humorous, and so do the parents. They're like, just stand over there and chill out. I'm just talking to your former teacher or whatever. And so it brings a smile to my face to think of that, because that's happened a couple of times near the end of the summer where I see a parent of a student that I taught, and we just, you know, it's easy to talk to them. We have things in common, and they're nice people, and you just chat it up, and you look over and the student's standing there just like, how is this going to end? Is somebody going to say something about me that they shouldn't say? Like, you can see it all in their face. And I always joke with the kids, and I tell them, when I see you outside of school, when I see your parents outside of school, I'm not trying to bring stuff into the conversation that's going to affect you negatively. Like, it's my weekend too, you know? So I don't want to drag, I don't want to drag work into this. I find that hard to believe. That, you know, what do you mean you're not going to talk about my behavior at school? Well, we're not at school. Like, I'm living my life, you're living yours, and your parents don't want to hear about that.
Yeah.
You know, at 7 p.m. at the Ball Diamond when they're there to watch you and enjoy their evening. They don't want to hear that. So I'm not going there.
Yep. I actually have, even in those moments, redirected the parent, where the parent jumps in and, you know, the parent and the kid both kind of notice you at the same time. And then you can see the kid kind of is starting to look away, but you can see the parent just like coming in, right? And then, And it's admitted, my read on that is like, okay, this, we're not going to start with a social moment. It's going to start with an academic moment. And then the parent will start with something about attendance or behavior or, you know, math scores, something. And I will often redirect that conversation and make sure that I come back and I say, it's great to meet you finally, or it's great to see you again, or I love being out at the farmer's market, or I love being out, you know, at the mall, because I get to run into the community. And then that, it's funny how often that kind of defangs the moment a little bit. And then sometimes the kid goes from this to just slightly coming back to the conversation because they no longer have to look away. The next step, though, is that you do end up stepping in a little bit of a weirdness moment, because then if you're not going to talk about school, what do you talk about? Because, you know, we think about how fluid that is when we connect with people that are not related directly to school. So your friends and family and your neighbors, let's say. And you could be talking about your grass looks really great this season, Roland, or we're going to be away for a couple weeks. Can you keep an eye on the house? Like the stuff that is just small talk, but the small talk is what's necessary to build relationships. Either that you learn to tolerate the small talk, recognizing that we're connected, or that you find something in the small talk that creates further connectivity. So those moments are more complex sometimes than are given credit for. And I can understand why some of my colleagues or other teachers, parents, let's put on both sides. If you're not prepared to build the relationship, then those moments can be pretty tricky.
I think they're more awkward, right? When you're not trying to build anything, or you're not...
The blind date.
Yeah. It's tough. It's like... and you can feel it on both ends.
Mm-hmm.
And personally, I just like to know. I like to know what's up outside of school. Like, because I'm at school every day, all day. So when I get out...
Yeah.
I want to do other things. I want to talk about other things. I don't want to spend all my time at work, so to speak. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And when we see our children's teachers, I don't want to talk about school. Like a couple of times we'd see my oldest, we'd see his teacher out and about. And it's like, hey, what's up? What are you up to? How are things going? You know, I don't want to talk about work, and she doesn't want to talk about work. He thinks we're going to talk about work, but neither one of us are interested because that's what we do all day. So it's just like, what's going on in life? How are you doing? Catch you next time kind of thing. So, yeah. You know what, Clough? I think our first weeks have been, or first week, sorry, has been just totally loaded with all kinds of stuff. And I'm looking forward to chatting with you about how things play out. Like I'm looking forward
for sure
to figuring out whether my teachers are more than teachers thing eases up a little bit over the next few weeks. I think it will, because, you know, I will be in some kind of zone with my students where giving them what they need, which might be different than things other people need, just becomes routine and normal, because I will get to know them and be able to function in a way that gives them what they need, like automatically. I hope that happens. I know it will. It's just I feel right now like I've never really paid attention to it like I did this week, and it got me thinking about just how much there is to do with these little people.
And the bigger versions that I work with, the bigger little people. I'd like to maybe, I'll throw it out to anyone that finds this conversation, drop a message, and you can go back through my Twitter feed at Chris J. Clough. Do we have a Twitter feed for Decoded?
No, we don't.
Something to look at.
I'm sure something will come. Something will grow from here. We do have an email, though.
Okay, throw it down.
It's edu-decode. So it's edudecoded@gmail.com. So you can drop a line that way, too, if you hear something.
Well, I'm curious. I actually have a curiosity. I'm curious about I'm curious, you had mentioned about that importance of attending community events. So, you know, is that something that you go for? You get to the hockey games. You sort of know when, you know, some of your students are in parades, or if they're performing, you know, they're in little theater, or they're doing an art thing, or in competitions. Yeah, I'd be curious. What sort of community events do you really dig getting out to in order to build those, you know, go from the classroom to the hallway to the parking lot to the mall connections?
Those connections, the scary connections and the exciting connections.
Absolutely, man.
What do you have planned for today? You still have a little bit of a weekend left. You got any big plans?
Yep, for sure. Yep, there's a play date scheduled for my kids. I think we're heading out to the zoo later on this afternoon. We're hoping for some good weather. A little bit of planning and organizing to get stuff ready to take back to school tomorrow. And grocery shopping, mow a lawn, maybe all that stuff.
That's a kind of a long list. You got lots to do.
Yeah, it all depends. Yeah, it's all in how the Lego pieces fit together, right? Because sometimes they can overlap. That's a nice thing. Like, can I get the lawn cut while the kids are having their play date? Groceries is always a standalone, but hey,
sounds
that's weekend
just like
life.
My place.
Yeah, I know. That's how I roll. So, are we heading off in our separate directions then? Have we done it? Is this episode two? Episode two.
I think so. This is episode two, and it looks like, wow, we had a lot to talk about. I'll give you a quick rundown before I let you go. So, like, I really
that was a cool start.
The way that we had the baseball connection and education. Unfortunately, it was about cheating, but anyway, we move on with that. And then, like, it was great to talk to you about your first week back. Teachers being more than teachers, those relationships mm-hmm. with students and parents and the different layers that are there. And I really liked at the end of our little chat where you mentioned to people that you'd love to hear about, or we'd love to hear about, the types of extracurricular things mm-hmm. that they might engage in outside of school, and you know what their thoughts are about having their kids' teacher come out and check things out and just be interested in what's happening outside of the school building. So I thought that was really neat, and I'm looking forward to the next time you and I chat about what's going on at school and you know what we're up to and what we're thinking about what we're doing.
I just gave a thumbs up. That would only work on video, and I realized I went way too meta by telling everyone I gave a thumbs up.
It's all good, because not everybody's going to be watching this. Some people are just going to listen to this, right? Okay, well, enjoy the rest of your day, and hopefully we'll be chatting sooner rather than later.
You can bet on it. Thanks, Roland. Thanks for the convo.